It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use ExpressFund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/RaceLens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Back at the races, coming up toward the top of the hour, the first half of the Royal Ascot card in the books, and a very big group coming up in the Duke of Cambridge, and we'll talk with Seth Merrow for that one right now. Got to look forward to the action. Forget about Royal Ascot. How about Indiana Grand? Has just as regal of a sound to it, doesn't it? Bill Downs, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm terrific. We're taking in Royal Ascot with the opportunity, you know, to be on in the AM like this and take their first four races each day. But I got to say that later this afternoon, you've got a tremendous card at Indiana Grand. Not just the Hoosier series, but there's also a couple of very good open company allowances today and almost full fields in every race.
Yeah, you know, just like Royal Ascot, though, we got some rain. If anyone was watching at the end of the card yesterday, we got hit with a pretty good deluge, and that will go with what it's been a very wet week in central Indiana. And unfortunately, we'll be off of the turf today, but still some very interesting runners on the card today.
Well, the two stakes are main track, but boy, that's too bad because those two allowances, the fourth and the sixth, you had really nice potential in here. We'll see how they get carved up in terms of scratches, but that's too bad. All right.
Yeah, there is a few scratches, but the favorite in the race, which is probably the horse I think the filly that has the most potential in that fourth race, is the 11-horse Moore Roses for LNJ Foxwoods. Brad Cox, a daughter of Uncle Mo, that they paid $380,000 for, and she got bet down as the odds-on favorite in the race got taken off of the turf on May 14th. And she went to the lead and never looked back. And she, I think, has got a bit of quality about her. I expect her to go off at a short price today. You know, it was going to be a stiff test if it was on the turf because she drew post position number 11, going up against winners, going up against older fillies and mares right. For the first time. But now with the race scratching down quite a bit, More Roses is probably going to be more along the lines of even money. The other contender that's in the race, it's a pretty nice filly herself, an Indiana bred, who did all right in open company last time out, French Legacy. Her trainer, Greg Foley, was a fast closing second against open company last time out, has won going a route of ground before on and off track. And that's going to be the big question mark. Right now, the track is listed as money, but we're still we're hours away from the races at Indiana Grand. And there is a forecast potentially for some rain as well. So it's kind of an iffy what type of racetrack we're going to get. But French Legacy, she has won going a route of ground on two turns on and off track. So the off track certainly wouldn't hurt her. So I think it's probably a showdown between the ultra talented More Roses and French Legacy in that fourth race.
Well, this weather pattern is just, I mean, so frustrating. And they're off the turf today, too, at Belmont. It's unending. I guess we should be, you know, thinking about what went on at Churchill on Saturday night. Everybody was looking forward to that card. And that was threatened by weather, but they ended up, you know, being able to sneak through. So this is just frustrating. There's no other way to laid this out.
I'll give you someone who the late John Asher used to say, when you play outside, it's going to rain sometimes. So, you just have to deal with the elements and what happens, and it's stuff like that does happen. You mentioned that sixth race at this time. Probably the most interesting runner in the race that's still in the field is Madison's Luna, who's going to get a lot more support than what I put her in the morning line at 5-1. She's going back on 6 days. She ran at Churchill Downs in a pretty tough, allowance race at Churchill Downs, where the pace was very, very fast. And this is a speed horse. And he didn't get the lead, and he didn't run that well. But the fact that Philip Bauer wheels him back in just 6 days and now stretching out over a route of ground, inside post, probably have to deal with C. Admiral, who's still in the race, who's the other primary speed horse in the race. But Madison's Luna is certainly accomplished on dirt. Of course, won the Hutchinson Stakes back in 2018. And ironically, that's his last win. But finds a much better spot, I guess, today. Should be put on the front end. And if you can outbreak C. Admiral from the rail, might be able to dictate terms in that sixth race.
We'll talk about the stakes in a minute. Bill, let's catch up on the last couple of weeks since we spoke last. And, we're also going to look forward ahead to the Oaks and the Derby, not far off either. But what have we missed here the last, the last fortnight?
Well, Marcelino Pedroza certainly gotten hot. He had two wins, I think, yesterday, but it was on Saturday that he made a little bit of a headline. He won five races on the Saturday card. Yeah, and he's, I think, now back in the lead in the jockey standings, taking the lead back from the Deshaun Parker, who was certainly riding in good form as well. But Pedroza has been really the hot jockey, I guess, since we last talked.
I also noticed the other day the Garcias, both Gennaro and Izzy, they won. What'd they win? Like five races between them?
Yeah, they won multiple on the card. That's certainly a fun little story as well. When those two are going up against each other, it's kind of like, the Ortiz in every race out in New York.
I love it. There were also a couple of performances that kind of caught my eye, and I gotta find it from was it last week? There was a turf sprint performance. There it is, Parade Blue. Jeff Metz. I thought that was impressive, and this looks like a horse that might be going somewhere.
Yeah, I was on, pulling up the chart one more time here, was on June 11th. Yeah, it was a decent race. It was unfortunately, it was a race where Anatolian Heat clipped Heald, and it was clipped Heald, and then, of course, they're always going to be safe, banned off after the race. But Parade Blue blew home in the last furlong to get up to the win. Sakani's not a bad horse. You know, the race kind of set up with some speed in the race. They went an insane pace on the front end, even for Indiana Grand, when the turf course is quite firm. So Parade Blue did benefit from a pretty strong pace to win and went off at the longest price in the race, 15-1. One thing I guess you mentioned the Indiana Derby before, Steve. You always get rumors this time of year. For at least we do. I'm always checking every DRF article or Blood Horse or you name it. I do Google searches and whatnot. But the winner of that win is potentially going to be pointing towards the Indiana Derby, Mr. Money. They're either pointing probably towards the Indiana Derby or potentially the Hassle Stakes. It's just, how difficult of a race do you want to go in next time out? That will probably be the question mark. You know, the Hassle's worth, seven figures. We're worth a piddly $500,000. But hopefully Mr. Money, winner of the Matt Wynn, will highlight the Indiana Derby field. And I'll go on a limb. I'll say I'll make him the favorite if he comes to comes to Shelbyville.
Well, there's every opportunity, I think, to bring in some horses that we're getting some emerging 3-year-olds that weren't necessarily a big part of the earlier Derby trail season either, Bill. There's no telling. I mean, what do we got? 3 weeks? 3 weeks, right?
Yeah, July 13th. Saturday, July
13th. Well, there you go. And so, between – and we talked to Brett Calhoun, and he acknowledged that, the Indiana Derby, a potential spot for Money. And how about, chances are Dale Romansdale typically will send a horse your way, maybe Everfast. He's always got a couple of 3-year-olds kicking around beside the ones that we know about and expect. The Indiana Derby, Baffert, Baffert's eligible to send one of his as well. So we'll watch as that field comes together, and
talk. Baffert's been known over the years. Certainly has a history. But going back to Calhoun, the other 3-year-old that he's got, obviously he'll keep in different.
By my standards.
Spots, by my standards, winner of the Louisiana Derby, who finished 11th in the Kentucky Derby, hasn't raced since the Derby. If they go with Mr. Money to the Hassle Stakes, then they probably would send by my standards to the Indiana Derby. Now, they say they run in the Indiana Derby with Mr. Money, and then they might go like in the Iowa Derby or something like that with By My Standards. But I think Calhoun will have at least one in the gate in the Indiana Derby when it's all said and done.
I wanted to pull up the list. And, of course, Axelrod last year with Michael McCarthy, Doug O'Neill with IRAP in 17. Yeah. Cupid for Baffert in 16. Tis Shay D. I forgot about it. It is a good list. Tis Shay D for Mott. And how about East Hall, Bill Kaplan? Absolutely. Baffert again, Power Broker, Neck and Neck, Wilburn.
Management made a change was 3 years ago. They switched the Indiana Derby from the fall to the summer. And it was simply that we weren't getting the fields that we thought we should get it for that race, and we decided to position it before the Saratoga Madness starts. And so we moved it to mid-July. And the last 3 years, as you mentioned, those three horses are all pretty darn good: IRAP, Cupid, and Axelrod are all really strong representation of winning the Indiana Derby, and hopefully we'll have another pretty darn good field this year.
Well, and there are horses on the Indiana Derby list that are personal favorites, including Zeniero for Steve Asmussen, the ill-fated Tin Cup Chalice. And this was such Mike Lassesi has trained a couple for us, and that was such a special win for Mike and Scott Van Leer. Poor Chalice. That was he died in a collision, a training accident. I mean, just unbelievable. Brass Hat, one of my all-time favorites. If you head down to Bowling Green, you can go to Buff's Farm and you can see him in Buff's backyard if you want to see Brassy and Perfect Drift, who was a personal favorite and a horse that had to be timed perfectly to get to the wire. He was a refusenik, a horse that did not like to pass a leader, and you had to. He was like playing bumper pool. You had to hit him just right to get a win out of Perfect Drift.
Yeah, I do remember. Murray Johnson was the trainer.
Yeah, absolutely. Drift. Yeah. Absolutely. Although I think at that point he may have been moved. I got to look that up now that you say that. I'm curious. I'm glad you, anyway, it's a great list. It includes Looking at Lucky.
There's your bathroom, big one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been here since 2013 when they moved the thoroughbreds, all the thoroughbreds to Indiana Grand and moved all the harness horses up to Hoosier Park. And I remember Power Broker 2013. And it absolutely rained cats and dogs about 10 minutes before the race. I was like, oh, my goodness, my first Indiana Derby, and I can barely even see out of my announcer's booth. And it's decided that it was a sea of slop in a huge field. So I always have that memory of Power Broker.
Well, and that's pretty much what they're dealing with, the last hour at Royal Ascot as well. Let's take a look today.
Yes.
Bill, how about some opinions about these two stakes?
Yeah, I probably have a stronger opinion in the seventh race than I do the eighth race, and it's for the Colts and Geldings, three-year-old Hoosier Breeders sophomore stakes, a mile in the 16th, and at this point I don't have any scratches. Morning line favorites, Snicker Cookie to the outside, winner of the Indiana Futurity, two starts back, but is stuck wide, and that's the big, equalizer with Snicker Cookie. Was a very impressive winner in an Indiana Sired Stakes race coming off the shelf on May 22nd, defeating Ace of Aces in the race. But the horse I'm really interested in, and it was hard to make a morning line with him, and that's the four-horse, two birds, one stone for trainer Mike Lauer. It took him a while to get going, but the two starts back, the light went on with him at Oaklawn Park, finishing third in an open maiden race, and then came back at Indiana Grand, got back in versus the state bred, and just blew the field away as the gigantic favorite on June 7th, and he won it visually impressively. Sometimes horses can win by big distances, and you're kind of like, all right, he's under pressure. You know, he did what, he won and all that. But two birds, one stone is getting better with each and every start. And it's probably be my best bet of the day in the seventh race. I made him a 9-2 in the morning line. Like I said, I don't know what's going to – he was a hard horse to make a morning line for. But this race, I think, sets up with Ace of Aces, the 2, and Cap de Fuego, the 7, both coming out of sprint victories on the front end. So the early pace is going to be honest enough, and two birds, one stone likes to come from far off the pace, and that kind of helped me make my decision of liking two birds, one stone. And I have nothing against Snicker Cookie, but we'll see if he can get a proper trip in that seventh race.
No, you make a lot of sense, and I suppose. Yeah, I suppose the pace, the cap de Fuego and Ace of Aces, and I wouldn't be surprised if Gabe Saez you know, given being outposted that way, it won't be surprised if he tries to get position and he adds to the pace. So you really are onto something here, Bill, in terms of how Marcelino Pedroza can approach this. He can let the speeds kind of kill each other off, and he can come with a move. And you know, and he was competitive against open company trying to break his maiden. That included serious company in down at Oaklawn. So I think he's got a lot going for him here, and you're right. He's certainly not going to be favored. I think you sniffed one out here.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite handicapping angles, Steve. I saw it yesterday also with a horse named Pretty Asset, just an Indiana bred, winning an Indiana bred allowance race. But he took him a while just to kind of figure things out. He had many starts, you know, 7, 8 starts, I think it's a lot of starts before you break your maiden. And once he finally did, it took him like a start or two before I saw a little bit of the improvement. And he won his last race, and he just surged late to get up for the win. And the exact same thing happened yesterday. It looked like a horse was home, and here I'm like, I didn't give up on him because I remember his last race. And here he came, and he did the exact same thing, and just the last 16th of a mile, it just took off and got up for the win. Two birds, one stone. Like I said, he had a lot of races. Yeah, they were at Churchill and Oaklawn Park and maiden races, but really kind of nondescript type of races. And then that race on May the 4th, at a big price, at 24-1, came flying late for third. And visually, you could see you were like, yeah, he's going pretty good at the end. Yeah, it was a fast pace that day. But you knew coming back against Indiana bred that two birds, one stone was going to be extremely difficult to beat.
Yeah.
And he won it, and he won it so easily, too. So this is a big up in class, skipping the allowance condition, but going in the stakes race for $100,000. But two birds, one stone, for all the reasons I mentioned, that's why I like him in the seventh race.
Well, and Mike Lauer does a terrific job in the girls' race. Does Crunch have to win this?
That's the big question. That's the thing, Steve. There is a big scratch, and it is Crunch. So that's going to
change
everything. And I was surprised. Must be something. Must be sick. She must be sick or something, because she won on a sloppy track last time out on May 22nd. Was going to make her first start going around the ground. So I guess the de facto favorite goes to the one horse, Moves Like Magic, who is also going from a sprint to a route for the first time, a daughter of McLean's Music. Out of Metocton there. There's some question marks there. She lost a really nice filly in Unbridled Class last time out and went off as a big favorite and Moves Like Magic. I thought a pretty deep field finished a second in that race as an inside post. And, it looks like to be the one to beat. But, there's some interesting horses in the race. I guess we'll first mention Fireball Baby. Well, I don't know what happened with her last time out. She didn't have the greatest start in the world. It did mention she was blocked at the eighth pole. But I don't think that trouble prevented her from winning. And I think if you're going to take a more positive view as Fireball Baby, it's that she didn't have the best start in the world. She drew the rail in that race, and she just wasn't herself. She won an Indiana bred stakes race as a two-year-old at the end of last season, so the stretch out from a sprint to a route is not a question mark. But Fireball Baby is the question mark horse for me. But there's a couple of fillies now, I think, that move more into the picture. They were big prices on the line. Royal Gem debuted going two turns for Tony Granite and got up, and it wasn't that fast of a pace and was able to close from mid-pack to get up for the win. She showed that she liked a route of ground. She is the daughter of Bellamy Road out of A Perfect Soul Mare, so you know that she likes two turns. And Quiet Contender was on the turf in her two-turn debut, and she finished a good second. And, I was actually somewhat impressed with the race because I didn't think that she was going to be much of a turf horse, but she still finished second. Yeah, the speed figure wasn't that great, but she improved, I thought, improved a little bit going around the ground. And she's got breeding that suggests that she would like going around two turns. And she's a huge price as well. So those are just like a couple of fillies maybe to throw into your exotic bets in the eighth race, which is now a much more wide open race with the defection of the seven Crunch.
It's a nice card despite the off the turf and the two stakes that highlight the action at Indiana Grand later this afternoon. First post, 2:15 today. And, Bill, I appreciate it. When we talk in 2 weeks, we'll be anticipating the Indiana Derby and the Oaks and everything that comes with it.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, we'll be all over that at that point in time, for sure, Steve.
Bill Downs, and you can follow Bill on Twitter, Bill Downs 1, Indiana Grand, later this afternoon. We'll stay here for just a couple of minutes before Seth Merrow joins us, and let's dive in to this group in the Duke of Cambridge. And a big, bulky field of 17, and we're about 3 minutes away, giving you a couple of ideas here about the market. And I can tell you that I Can Fly and Rawada, those are your tote favorites at 2-1 and 3-1, and the bookie shops, same thing, 7-2 and 9-2. So they're also, you know, taking the same amount of money. Agriterra is the third choice in the bookies. 8-1 Agriterra is trading at, and 13-1 on the tote. And I'm just looking. I don't think, Voracious. Voracious is 9-1 in the shops, 9-1 on the tote. Basically the fifth choice. Pretty Baby. Pretty Baby, 8-1 and 7-1. There we go. So they're about the same. The Agriterra, among the favorites. Agriterra is your overlay on the tote. Move Swiftly. 11-1. Move Swiftly. And 11-1 in the shops. 17-1 on the tote. Anna Nerium is next. And here's one too. 12-1 on the tote, or on the shops, and 21-1 currently in the shops. So there you go. There's a value. 12-1 on Red Tea. And 27-1 on the tote. So another horse trading twice the price. Defeaty, the six. Defeaty, 53-1 in the tote. 16-1, though, in the betting shops. How about that? There is a, that's a huge spread. Preening, who Kev Humphrey liked coming into this. 37-1 on the tote, 25-1, and about the 10th choice. So if we're looking for a bomb, it's the 6, Defeaty. Rafe Beckett, trainee, and daughter of Charmadal. There's your value, your giant crazy value. So Agriterra, the 2. And Defeaty, the 6, looking like the ones that the bookies are hinting at. And, of course, you know, how do you have to deal with Coolmore and Ryan Moore. I Can Fly as your favorite, and Rawada as well. Let me go back over here and see how close they are. They're calling it post time. They're still moving toward. And yeah, these two numbers, 47, Defeaty has to come down a little bit, 47-1. And looking at who else, Kev, because Kev did add a couple of other, he added a couple of other potential prices to go with preening. Rawada was also one that he was respecting, but you're not getting a price. He's basically she's basically the Teofilo daughter for Sir Michael is the second choice. So I'm giving you two others, the 2 and the 6 to consider based on what the tote is giving us versus the betting shops. So glad we had just a little bit. Yeah, I've got the video too. Although I'm ahead of you, Deja. with my feed. The feed today, today actually, courtesy of Naira Betts. Yesterday, and people were, and I speculated too, and I saw some other people ask after the day was over, depending on what you were watching, whether you were getting Ask It. And the question was, if NBC had, you know, somehow negotiated, you know, rights of live broadcast. And I guess the answer is no, because Naira Betts has got the live feed. So I don't know what went on, at least yesterday. And there was a little confusion on a couple of different fronts. And I'm just going to, let me see. I'm curious if the other, I've got a couple of different platforms. Yeah, now see, today ExpressBet is they've got the feed smoothly. So I don't know what happened yesterday, why the feed was not coming through on a live basis. We went to the TV, but the ADW platforms, I did hear from people that, I guess what, TVG did not, and as a result, New Jersey Betts, that they were unable, you were unable in Jersey to play. It's got to be maddening. Well, and especially I would think because of Betfair, you even have the advantage of the in-race wager. So I keeping track of all of this is, as we talked with Pete, you know, can be a little taxing. Sometimes you don't know where the confusion even is going to generate. They're pretty close to a start. I don't know, Deja, how far behind you are, but I can tell you that the live action. Bring up the audio then. Yeah, they're you're a good 30 seconds, it seems, behind. Straight mile, as they mentioned. Here we go.
Whipped off and away they jump. And Shenanigans jumps out well in the centre. Bella Ragazza, the grey, is relatively handy and also voracious, but no one that keen to press on at the moment. Nialetti is another who's making a little bit of progress. So in the early stages, Nialetti in company as well with the blue cap of Preening carting her way to the front. Indian Blessing is the one that's on the right-hand side racing solo. So up the centre, voracious in the red-white sash white cap racing keenly for Oisin Murphy. Blue cap, same jacket for Preening, and Nialetti between the pair. Indian Blessing in the striped colours is right on the stand side and right up with the pace as Bella Ragazza and DeFede in company with Shenanigans track the leaders. Over on the far side, Pretty Baby, yellow and black colours, races just ahead of Rawdar and then Red Tea, and Anerium's over there as well in company with I Can Fly, and in that far side group, Hand on Heart. At the back is Agratira, just preceded by Move Swiftly in the noseband and then Downstream in the purple colours. So Indian Blessing towards the stand side, disputing it with Nialetti, voracious, and Preening over on the far side. Shenanigans comes next from behind these, Bella Ragazza, who is the grey horse, threading in the pale jacket alongside Shenanigans. Hand on Heart tries to improve as they race now with 2.5 furlongs to go. Nialetti sweating in the center but still has the lead, with Voracious still poised. Shenanigans just behind the leaders. DeFede is moving towards the far side in company as well with Preening, and also making good progress is Move Swiftly, who's done just that to get into third or fourth place. Out in front, Voracious, over on the far side, Frankie Dettori, and Rawdar throws down a challenge, and now I Can Fly over on the far side as well, and Move Swiftly. Four fillies heading towards the line. Rawdar in the red. I Can Fly over on the far side in the purple, and Move Swiftly in the noseband for Danny Tuttle. Move Swiftly, a third winner of the week for Danny Tuttle. As one for William Haggis, beating Rawdar, I Can Fly, Voracious, and DeFede. Anemerium, Nialetti, Red Tea, Shenanigans, Indian Blessing, Agratira, threading the last few, Hand on Heart ahead of Pretty Baby, and the last two across the line included Bella Ragazza and also Dan's Dream. What a week for Danny Tutto. Move Swiftly galloped into contention on the stand side as Rawdar for Frankie Dettori played his hand over on the far side. I Can Fly in third place, and in fourth behind those, Voracious, who was just a little keen in the early stages. DeFede has come home in fifth place, and Anerium running her normal honest race, but no better than sixth on this occasion from Nialetti. Just a handful of rides.
Danny Tuttle, and as mentioned, third win in the first 10 races, and you ended up with a decent number here too. William Haggis trainee, Sheikh Rashid Dalmuk Al Maktoum, and a four-year-old Fahar filly. Move swiftly, 9-13-1-7. And that DeFede ended up, thought there was a little hope for the 50-1 shot. Ended up fifth, though, but 9-13-1-7. Rawda was second for Sir Michael and for Frankie Dettori. And I Can Fly. So the two favorites run second and third behind a decent price in Move Swiftly. We're going to move swiftly to the bottom of the hour in the break, and Seth Merrow standing by, and Seth is wearing his morning jacket. I mean, it's very rumpled, and it's probably a windbreaker, but it is a morning jacket. Seth Merrow joins us next at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back. Bottom of hour three, another frenetic morning with the action from Royal Ascot, and of course Seth Merrow standing by. And Seth, Seth's been hosting a Royal Ascot party at the Capital OTB studios. The crumpets, the strawberries and cream, and it's quite a scene, I'm sure, there in Albany. The race book, it's got to be mobbed.
I'm actually at home. I'm not on TV today, but I'm sure they did open the doors early, I'm sure, because
we typically
do for Royal Ascot, so I'm sure there's a crowd down there playing. I heard you talking before the break, morning coat, top hat. I don't, and I think most people when they go for rent, but I wouldn't be totally shocked if you had a morning coat and a top hat in your closet.
I do have, I've actually got three, believe it or not, I do have three different formal outfits. I've got a new tuxedo that Tina insisted because she didn't like my old tuxedo, and my old tuxedo I actually got at a vintage store in Montreal years ago, and I happen to love it. Tina's not as keen. It's got to be a 50s era. Tux. I've also got from maybe the 30s, I've got a tuxedo that I got at a vintage store as well. I got years ago in Cincinnati, actually in Covington. And that one has got tails.
So
I've got,
yeah,
I got three different. And you know what? Now that I'm thinking about it, my father had an Yves Saint Laurent 70s era. And I think I've actually got that in a back closet. So I may have four different versions of. The thing is, there just isn't enough occasion really to wear, and it's not what I have is not that outfit that you would wear at Royal Ascot. I mean, that's a different ensemble.
That's why I say most people have to rent. And
yeah.
Who has the top hat? Nobody has the top hat.
The top hat might be, although I do have to pull out, I haven't pulled it out yet, the incredible picture of Johnny D from a couple of years ago when Johnny and Gail went over. And Johnny, you know, they were not in the royal enclosure, so he didn't have to wear the top hat. Instead, he had kind of a bowler style, and he absolutely was a dead ringer for John Steed in the Avengers. It's hysterical. I will pull out my pick because I found a side by side comparison of Johnny and John Steed.
And was his wife Emma Peel?
She has a slightly different look than Diana Rigg, but yes, she could pass for Emma Peel-esque. Yes,
they were. Perfectly dressed for the occasion.
I've got to find that. I think I pulled it out last year, and everybody, for those that haven't seen it, that know Johnny. By the way, I also have to send Johnny. Has been riffing. You know, he broke out of an extended slump that frankly he was grousing about endlessly. But he sent me a link on YouTube, Seth. You got to see it. It's hysterical. It's from his XB, well, now it's XBTV, but the HRTV days. And he would do these series of vignettes, very similar to the ones that Mitch Levitis used to do at Saratoga.
Sure.
Which are a panic. In fact, somebody on Twitter sent out a link to one of Mitch Levitis's Man About Saratoga videos that he did for about 2 years, and then they were so irreverent that management, I think, kind of got kind of freaked by what Mitch, but they were so funny with Chowderman, and oh my God, they were funny.
Mitch is hilarious. If folks don't know Mitch, and Mitch typically does the commentary on the Jockey Horseman basketball game, the charity game up here, and the last couple of years. They invited me to play on the Horseman's team. And Mitch, I forgot what the comment was last year, but I came on the court, and it was something like, hey, you left your walker on the sideline. There was some kind of age comment that Mitch tossed out there. And then And then a couple of years ago, you've done the same thing. And a couple of years ago, I made a basket, came back, kind of pointed him out. This year, though, he made the comment, I don't even know if I touched the ball. So I had to head to the bench humiliated after the comment this year. That they said this past summer. Yeah, last summer.
That's great. I will find, I got to find this because it's one of my favorite. And, you know, Johnny and I are supposed, we've been kicking around the idea of Johnny and I going over and you know, spending the week and broadcasting from Royal Ascot. And we have to get out in front of it. We have to get, you know, we got to plan like 6 months of it, and it always ends up being Triple Crown season when we realize we didn't plan on this. So Tina said to me, why have we not gone? So
there's the push you need.
Well, yeah. 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 Very true.
It would be fun, though, because there's nothing like that 5 days Ascot. The race. I mean, I always love that they kick it off. First race of the meet, grade one, group one.
Yeah, three group ones on day one.
Yeah, crazy.
Well,
and I have to thank you. Yeah, I'm sitting here in front of the computer and kind of doing some work, and then you were counting the fourth race there, and I looked, and I think that was a $61 exacta for a buck. That last race. Yeah.
Tremendous. Yeah. Tremendous. Good work. Well,
so far, so good.
I love it. Well, and of course, today's been a little tricky. We'll see about the last pair, and you do have gigantic fields again coming up. You got the Royal Hunt Cup, which is a handicap, and looking at this bunch, it's going to be a mile, and you've got you do have a couple of scratches, I think, but you still ended up with, I don't know, 28 horses, 29 horses. There is a field group from 24 to 31. That's a field bet. And I'm just, I want to give everybody the plays that Kev had in mind in here in the Hunt Cup. So bear with me a second. There we go. Kev Humphreys. And, you know, because a field this size, he thought that yesterday when we talked, he was interested in Robin of Navan and Settle for Bay. And let's get a handle on those prices, and we'll see about the official on the fourth. But starting with Robin of Navan, no, they're not. They haven't come official yet, so we don't have the prices. It's only 20 minutes to post. Come on. Have you heard some frustrations with certain parts of this? I know yesterday people were straining to, you know, get bets in, and there were certain. You know, certain issues.
I heard secondhand that early there was a couple of problems, but then it cleared out.
Well, 19 minutes to post, and there's no odds right now.
Well, I don't know whether that's an issue or not, but it seems like the international racing, I don't know how unusual, but the odds not coming up is maybe a little unusual, but the results always seem to take longer than you would expect.
Well, that I'm used to. But now this is a new trick to not have odds. Well, here's what I can do. I can swing through and give you what is going on in the bookie shops to give you guys an idea of where you should concentrate. How about that? We will skirt the pricing until it shows up in the bookie shops. You're looking at New Graduate and Raising Sand. They are your two favorites, and they're both 5-1, 9-2, 11-2. They're both trading very evenly. You do get DeTore, with New Graduate. This is the nine horse, a new approach colt, Raising Sand. Raising Sand is the 14, Jamie Osborne, who came up earlier on the show with Pete Fornatale. Pete partying with the Jamie Osborne team yesterday in the car park, as they call it. So those two are favorites, co-favorites, basically. Kine Wren, K-Y-N-R-E-N, is your third choice in the shops. And Kine Wren is the 19. And that may be a horse that is on the tote going to be a bit higher. Robin of Navan next, who we discussed, and 10-1, 12-1. Kine Wren is 8-9-1. What's the Story comes next, the 25. And fifth choice, 10, 11, 12 to 1 in the bookie shops. And that may be your overlay, maybe one of your nice overlays. Let me check again. How are you on? Are you looking at Capital OTB?
I am. It's shown 24 minutes and it's still no odds.
No odds. All right. Well, here, let me give everybody this help.
The results have come up, though. The results are up.
Okay. So maybe that's a good sign that if the results are official and the payoffs, that and I'm just checking back. No, this is problematic for those. But again, if you go to Odds Checker, that'll give you some help. Let me tweet this, Seth. Talk about how you did Saturday night. Did you enjoy a little Stephen
Saturday
Foster
night,
action?
I was in the studio. We did a special Saturday night of OTB Live. That was fun with the program they had down there, and I thought it was a nice night of racing. Mr. Money looked good. I wasn't totally convinced Mr. Money. I took a little shot with Signalman. I thought he went okay running second in there, but no threat to the winner. And it'll be interesting to see. You know, I heard Bill Downs on before and saying, and I heard after the race they were thinking Indiana Derby. I'll be interested to see what they do with Mr. Money, though. Hard Legacy in the Regret was a little bit, that for me in that pick five sequence would have been the one that was a little tough to come up with. Not impossible by any means. Stephen Foster, Seeking the Soul. You always have to watch Dallas, obviously, on the big night. I thought Tenfold coming out of that Pimlico special may have said, I can be a player in this division now. So running ninth in the field at 12 was a little bit disappointing. Gift Box running fourth, clearly a little bit disappointing there as well, but Seeking the Soul, again, at Dallas and a horse that on other occasions run big and big down there, certainly was usable. I took a little shot with She's a Julie over a late. I said, for me, I could have flipped them either way, but I just thought She's a Julie was kind of interesting coming off the previous couple of races. And above mid-stretch, I thought she was going to gut it out. And then she and Blue Prize going at it, and she put her head in front, and I thought she was going to be able to get to the line. And then when a late went by on the outside, she kind of gave it up a little bit and wound up third, but a late looked great. I mean, clearly Midnight Bijou is the leader in the division there, but a late with the win on Saturday night kind of stepped into a good position and marched to the arch in the YSD. And another one that I think would have been a little tough to come up with in that all-stakes pick. Five sequence, and that one was interesting. And I'm red boarding, but it's just one of those where you go back and you look. All Right, the horse that ran second at 71-1.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those horses were playable, but All Right is one of those where you had to look up at the tote board and say, I'm going to take a little flyer with this horse at the price because it shouldn't have been 71-1. Like I say, I'm kind of red porting and I didn't use the horse in my mix, but you see him go off at a price like that, you kind of look back and think, you know, this horse has a little more life than they're giving it credit for. And the exact in there was just 70 cents, what, 20 cents under $1,700. So, again, just kind of going back and looking, you could maybe realize something for the future handicapping wise.
The I thought the sequence was a lot of fun, and you know, I had had I didn't really have a chance to do much live work and play during the afternoon. I was in Connecticut for my father's party, his 90th birthday tomorrow, and we did a Father's Day thing together. So you know, the afternoon was committed. So I made some early plays, including the cross country, got slaughtered there. The pick six at the 2-day carryover, which ended up being, you know, really big, and you had limited number, 120,000, I think, the three winners, Seth, and you only had one winner in the cross country. Somebody took down the whole pool. But then by the time we got home, was ready to, take part in this, and it was a lot of fun. I wanted to kill myself when Mrs. Weber, with March to the Arch, you know, who, in fact, Cassie even had announced on the show that they were running, and I didn't use March to the Arch, and that killed me on the multis. I mean, everything else, and I did like Hard Legacy, and in fact, I kind of got out for the afternoon and evening with Hard Legacy and the try in the Regret. So I thought it was a really fun, and you know, having been there for the American Pharoah celebration, it now is a night that I can really relate to, and you know, when I see, you know, you see the crowd shots and you see the presenting of the trophy to you know, all the connections involved with Country House and with Bill Mott and Riley, and how special that all was. If people want to go to Churchill for an event other than Derby, Stephen Foster night, highly recommended. I mean, it was really special that night. And maybe it was because it was the Triple Crown winner, and maybe because he, you know, he allowed the handlers, Lalo and Jimmy Barnes and everybody, you know, an hour and 20 minutes, Seth, he spent. An hour and 20 minutes. It's just unheard of. I mean, and then finally you could see he started to stamp his foot and started to get, you know, annoyed at being, you know, displayed like a, you know, like a prize pig. He finally said, "Take me home, will you?" But it was great. Yeah. It was really special.
I mean, and that was reflected up at Saratoga. First, that is still one of my favorite racing memories, the workout the morning before the Travers, where people just streamed into the backstretch. And you looked over on the front side. I was doing TV that morning, but looked over on the front side, and the stands were filled like it was a race day. And this is, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning. But then they had the horse, after he had arrived in Saratoga, out on the backstretch, and they were kind of parading them around, and folks, there were some barriers, but folks were, line three deep around the barriers taking pictures, and they would walk them over, and people would reach out and pet them, and yeah, it was like a Labrador Retriever with the crowd.
I just got a tweet, I think I'm going to guess that this is my friend Mike. I don't know. But Porco is who came from. And he says that he could not get, when he tried to bet the fifth race online this morning.
Odds just came up.
They did.
Literally just came up.
Okay.
For the fifth.
All right. There we go. Good deal. All right. So we got about 10 minutes to post. And let me see if I can. Yeah, see, I'm. No. You've got it on Capital, huh?
Just came up. Well, as I said it, the number 9 new graduate, 3-1. Raising Sand is 6-1. They're the two favorites at this point.
All right, and I've got it. It's funny, I've got it on Naira Betts. It's come up too, and Express Bet. I don't think it's It still is not up. I'll check with Johnny and see what he can tell me, and maybe he knows if there's because this tweet says that. It, he wasn't allowed to bet five. He bet it before work, but got a refund already. So I'm not sure what's at play here on this front. So anyway, let's take a look at the spread and see if we can't find any more of these disparities as we'd like to do.
I did just make a bet, so my bet went in.
Your bet went. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the two plays that Kev Humphreys liked, Settle for Bay. It's 15-1 right now on the tote, and Robin of Navan 16-1. So a couple of mid-price teen prices here for the Royal Hunt, and you've got boy, this is such a big field. Raising Sand 5-1 is one of your favorites. You know, you got a screen all the way up and down, and you know the field horses. Oh, look at that! Vale of Kent had been entered, didn't he? Vale of Kent came for a juvenile race, right? Years ago, yeah.
That does sound right. Yeah.
Yeah, he did. The field's cut to 24, allowed to run, and he did have a scratch. The 20 and the 5 both came out of this. So
that's a field. 7-2. You get 9 of them.
Well, see, on Naira Bets, they're crossed out.
Oh, are they really?
Yeah.
Let me pull over. I don't think they were crossed out on mine.
Interesting.
Let me see.
These are the little...
They're all listed at 10-1.
Okay. All right. So if you bet 24, you're going to get the rest of them, obviously. So that's one of the, you know, for instance,
so you can bet 24.
You bet the 24 and you're going to get the field, because in fact, what's the story? Who's the 25 is one of the bookie horses.
Yeah, if 25 on or crossed out, that just may be a function of the tote system, I would think.
Could be. But yeah. if you bet the number 24, you're going to get the rest of them. Petrus and Clun Kulis and Behringer and Vale of Kent, etc. Okay. But in the meantime, there's only three horses that are single digits. You've got Raising Sand at 5-1, Key Victory at 9-1, and the 7-2 favorite, New Graduate. Otherwise, big balloons in this wacky group.
I went with the two favorites and tossed the 15 and the 19 in.
All right. Well, the 19 is 8-1 in the bookie shops, and what are you getting on the tote? 16-1. 16-1.
Yeah, they were both
very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. Well, that's the let's see if there's anybody else that we can give people an idea to. The four Morden. What do we got on Morden? 12-1. Not a great value there on Morden. Key Victory's a short. How about? These are no better. These are getting up. I'm trying to find somebody that is completely overlooked.
What about 15 Kingsfield? Where are the bookies going there? So you got the O'Brien brothers. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Looks like
at 25-1 on the tote.
25-1 in the bookie shops too.
Yeah, okay, so even Steven.
Yeah. No, I think we. You know, I think that this Kynren's okay. That feels like the right. 14-1 versus he's third choice in the in the bookies and 14 to 1 on the tote. So that might be the one. The, you know, these get crazy because you just there's horses that at a certain point you just are going to bet on the basis of, you know, jockey and trainer and connections, you know, like Charlie Appleby and Doyle and Godolphin with Key Victory, you know, or if you see a price that's crazy, you just, in a field like this, that new graduate, Dottori, you know, he's got to be taking Dottori money, right?
Yeah, you think so. I mean, I have to admit, that's why I tossed the two O'Brien brothers into the mix. I thought the combination was interesting.
Well, and if you want, you know, for those that like my partner Barry Fry used to say, you know, when a jockey gets hot, Barry would just start to, you know, bet them. And there was that one day at Saratoga where Johnny won six, I think. And after Johnny won his third, you know, Barry said, when I went to the windows, he said, just bet Johnny for me. And it ended up being a very clever maneuver. If you want to get hot with Danny Tudhope, he's on the seven. So beloved, 37 to one. So there, if you're going to bet a hot jock, maybe it's Tudhope, right? Yeah. So there it is. Now, Seth, you know, one thing that's become apparent, we just got about a minute to wrap up and send everybody out into the race day. The proximity of Saratoga, I know it's just a week earlier we're starting, but it just looks so much larger on the calendar with the 11th circled. It's kind of freaking everybody out around here.
I went and got my beach time and lobster time in Maine last week because next week we head up and to cover the Queen's Plate. And then, yeah, we get back from that, boom, Saratoga's right there.
Very much, you know, a week after July 4th. So, and we're going next week actually to Boston. Are you going to come to Suffolk for the closing weekend?
I did TV Sunday morning and left for Maine, and my game plan was to go catch last Sunday, and I got caught in traffic the last couple of years on the Mass Turnpike. Even you can get caught on a Sunday, and I was going to make maybe the last four races. And as I got caught in traffic, it just became apparent I wasn't going to make any, so I got to Worcester and took the turn up to Maine. But I wanted to make it last week, so I don't know if I'm going to make the last weekend or not.
Well, we're going to go Friday, and we'll be there for Friday, and I think we're going to broadcast and do a special New England tribute and retrospective.
Yeah, very good. You got to get, of course, Welch on the phone.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. I won't surprise me if Mike comes up. There's a lot of people, apparently, are coming. There's apparently, they're kind of come out of the woodwork from the New England racing history to be there. Yeah. And then...
I advise people to go. I went last summer, and it's worth the trip. It's a really nice track. It's a shame that it's on the way out.
We're on the way out, too, and we'll send you out to the race day. Seth Merrow, everybody. You can follow Seth on Twitter, which is just a delight. You never know what he's going to do.
I'm going to keep people on the edge of their seats.
It's a laugh a minute. Seth Merrow, too, everybody. And HRRN later this afternoon, 3 o'clock. Plenty of action, even though we're off the turf in most venues with this crappy weather. Back with you tomorrow, Thursday at the races. Thanks, everybody.